Hello and welcome back to the Disgusting Baseball Podcast. We are back after a pretty long layoff. I'm sure you might have noticed that we've got different hosts here. My name is Matt Dallas. I'm one of the writers here at Covering the Corner, and I have with me Mr. Quincy Wheeler. Quincy, how you doing?
Doing well, Matt. Good to be here.
Cool. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, introduce yourself a little bit so that the people at home can get to know you.
All right. Well, I am a Cleveland Guardians baseball fan, surprisingly. I started liking the team in 95. My dad wasn't really into sports much, so I kind of discovered baseball around that point. And then I think 97 was where I really fell in love with the team and baseball in general, and lived and died with them, and of course actually died at the end of that season with them. So since then I've just been following along and loving the team, and I like to write about them here and there and go after I like to write about them and talk about what's to come. And so eventually I got into Covering the Corner, and I would post on the website and the message board there, and I got into Twitter and talking to people there. So now I write for Covering the Corner. I have my own little podcast that I work with, and I got a chance to be on here with Matt. So I got to know Matt from Twitter, and that's been great.
Fantastic. Well, yeah, so I'm sure as many of you know, this podcast used to be affiliated directly with Covering the Corner. It was the official Covering the Corner, formerly Let's Go Tribe podcast. Even though we don't have that affiliation in a like literal capacity anymore, it's going to be kind of hard to shake that, right? It's always going to be kind of inextricably linked with the Covering the Corner website. So we're just going to kind of keep operating like, hey, they're very much related. So I wanted to kind of kick us off. You know, I think if there's one thing that this offseason is going to be about as a Cleveland Guardians fan, it's going to be this managerial search, right? We've had Tito at the helm for the last 10 years. The guy has become emblematic of what it means to be a Cleveland baseball fan over that time. Like, I don't know if I can remember a manager truly representing what it meant to be that team for so long, at least in my lifetime, except maybe like Joe Torre. But now that he's gone, that leaves a huge void to fill. And there's been a number of rumors. I've heard as much as like somewhere like 50 candidates that were interviewing for the job. There's been a couple people that have, you know, kind of gone on the, hey, it's probably not going to be this guy list. And then there's been some people that are heating up. So Quincy, what have you been hearing as far as who some of the hot candidates are at the moment?
It's the point in the off season, Matt, where the best that I can have as far as news goes is parsing through Paul Hoynes articles. So that's how desperate I am. And Paul recently said that Hoynesy said that Chris Valleca and John McDonald are rumored to have been interviewed for the job. So Chris Valleca being currently the Guardians hitting coach and John McDonald being a defense and on-field coordinator for them. So those are about the only two names we know for sure. Besides earlier names that were rumored, Craig Albernez, bullpen coach for the Giants, and Mendoza, the bench coach, Carlos Mendoza, the bench coach for the Yankees. I think those are the only four names that we've been rumored. Hey, these guys definitely interviewed.
Yeah, we've got some. I mean, I know there were some like Will Venable rumors, and we'll get into those in a little bit. But, you know, and I primarily remember John McDonald as the guy who, when I was going to games as a kid, was just me being disappointed that he was in the lineup instead of Omar Vizquel that day.
And also the guy, I was just going to say, the guy who beat out the last out in the should have been perfect game from Galarraga, I think, right?
That was Jason Donald.
Jason Donald. Oh, man.
Huh. Anyway. For all intents and purposes, the same player. although Johnny Mack had a little more sauce than Jason ever did, but that's another conversation.
What are the odds that Jason Donald would be the guy who did that?
I know, man. Just, gosh, at risk of diving into a 2009, 2010 Cleveland Indians rabbit hole, gosh, Jason Donald, McCord Phelps, all those randos that we had back then.
Cord Phelps.
Love those guys. Anyway, getting back on track, you know, John McDonald is just a guy that's just been around the game of baseball for a long time. And it's just, even as a player, you knew he was someone that was going to have his name crop up in managerial searches after he retired. So he seems kind of like a very humdrum kind of candidate. The guy I want to talk about a bit, because I feel like there's just so much conversation surrounding it, is Chris Valleca. he's drawn the ire of a lot of Guardians fans over the course of the last year. And, you know, in many cases, rightfully so. I mean, our offense hasn't been great. That's the area that he's responsible for. So it's natural to assume that, you know, the offense is suffering because he must, you know, inherently be bad at his job. And then when you see that, that in, you know, obviously follows into, well, therefore he must not be a good potential manager. But I think there's something to be said for the fact that being a manager and being a hitting coach are just two wildly different skill sets, right? Like the things that make you good at being a hitting coach aren't necessarily the things that make you good at being a manager and vice versa. It's not like football where a lot of what being a position like an offensive coordinator, a defensive coordinator translates well to being a head coach. But at the same time, you know, there's obviously some baggage that comes with him. So Quincy, what are your thoughts on Valeika's potential as a coach or a manager?
Yeah, I think you make some good points. None of us know a lot about how these guys would function as a manager in terms of getting a clubhouse in cohesion, getting them through tough times, helping guys stay with it late in the year, which I think, you know, when you think about Tito, what really is the best thing about Tito is that you never really had a worry about him losing the clubhouse, that guys would always give him their best. So it's hard to say that a guy in a position coach spot is getting the chance to really show those qualities. So you just have to trust the front office is going to figure those things out. Man, it would be tough to sell to the fan base to say, we just had one of the worst offensive seasons in the history of the franchise, and we're going to make the hitting coach the manager. I don't know how many people would be that clued in to be upset about it. Certainly Twitter would be upset. You know, message boards would be upset. Would the casual fan know much? I don't think so. But I wonder if they would. It just wouldn't be a great look, even if you and I can look here and say, yeah, it's probably fine because he's probably a good guy who knows how to lead players. And if he's able to do that, who cares? You know, so I don't know.
Think there's been at least one precursory conversation between Antonetti and the marketing department, if that's a direction they've thought about going. I think, though, this is important because it leads into maybe a broader overarching question about the managerial search, which is like, what is it exactly that we should be looking for in our next manager? Right. You know, and I don't want this to turn into a let's just list all of our gripes with Tito over the last 3 years, because that's a really easy trap to fall into of like, don't do this the way Tito did it, you know, should be our priorities. But there should be kind of an approach to like what exactly it is that we're looking for when we're hiring this guy, right? So if like for you, Quincy, what are your priorities, so to speak, for who our next manager should be? Like, what do you want them to be about?
Yeah, I'm interested to hear what you would say too. I think that there are probably general things, characteristics that we could say. I think I'd like to see someone who knows, who displays the ability to manage with a feel to what guys are experiencing. And, you know, to manage with a feel of understanding what players go through, and also with an eye to analytics, to what stats and numbers tell you, and knows how to incorporate those things. You know, you think about famously John Schneider of the Blue Jays taking out Berrios. Everybody's upset about that. And I don't know, maybe it was the right time to take Berrios out. But you do want to feel like your manager in that situation can know what the numbers say, but also have a sense of if your guy is dealing, if maybe it might just be time to see if he can give you another couple outs. You want the manager who can handle that situation, and you trust him with it, and players trust him with it. Players know that they can trust him to have their backs, but also hold them accountable based on the information, best information that he's got on how to win baseball games. Somebody who's competitive, but also somebody who's kind, care about those kind of things. That's one of the things I liked about Will Venables. I've read a few articles from reporters who had relationships with him who talked about how kind he was, and then how good he was at leading conversations, leading efforts, being competitive. Like, he was a super competitive player. You can even see that just looking at his Fangraphs page. So I liked that kind of idea. Hey, a young guy who knows what the stats are, but also relates very well to people. and shows a career of working extremely hard at everything he does. So I guess that's kind of what I think of. I think Tito showed a lot of those things. He was able to understand people and be kind, and he wasn't averse to numbers. Maybe could be a little more numbers friendly than Tito was, but had that career to back it up too.
For sure. And I think we sometimes give Tito a little too much blame for some of the analytics stuff. Like, let's not forget that the two organizations that have hired him and hit the successful stage of his career were the Boston Red Sox and the Cleveland Indians / Guardians, with Theo Epstein and Chris Antonetti, who are two of the most analytics driven managers or general managers, in the entire sport. And they both gave Tito their stamp of approval, right? So there's probably something to be said that, hey, we'll just build the analytics team and we just need a guy to grease the wheels. You know, that could very well have been the approach. But I don't know entirely that Tito was truly anti-analytics, as some of the more reactionary people on Twitter might say. As far as...
I was just going to say, he certainly displayed the actions of someone who understood analytics in the 2016 playoffs with the way that he handled relievers. And in fact, I would say in general, not that we have to go through Tito, but just to back up what you said, I would say in general that Tito understood bullpen use pretty well based on what the numbers would tell you to do.
For sure. I think a lot of those situations, right, where we would blame him for bringing in Karinchak, were a lot of situations where a strikeout was necessary.
Yep.
And Karinchak gave you the best chance of getting a strikeout relative to some of our more pitch to contact style of relievers. But again, saving from going down that rabbit hole, right, kind of what I'm looking for in our next manager is really two things. Obviously, the first being an analytical approach to the game. I do truly want to see somebody that takes that. Like, we're going to lean heavily into our roster construction, our lineup decisions, those kinds of things being built around analytics. I don't necessarily mind as much of the in-game decision-making being based around feel, as long as the pre-game decisions are based on what are the numbers telling us, right? Like, I don't mind, hey, let's leave the starting pitcher in to face the first three batters the third or fourth time through the order when the guy's dealing, as long as, hey, we're starting the better hitter, analytically speaking, over the guy that, is maybe like, really, we're not starting Miles Straw. Let's break it down. That's what I'm really trying to say.
we're not starting Miles Straw because he's good at cribbage.
Fair, exactly. On the flip side, too, I think one thing that sometimes gets lost in the myth-making and the legend of Tito is that he was a much better veterans manager than a young guy manager. Mm-hmm. And some of that gets lost because of the success of last season being 2022. But if you look, like, there were like so many frustrations with how Tito handled some of our young guys, whereas he's very much a good, like, win now, we have a veteran team manager. And I think he's really good at keeping guys loose, keeping guys bought in, helping guys play up to their potential, but maybe not always the best at teaching guys to acclimate themselves into the league well. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of guys have gotten off to slow starts as rookies, with the exception of maybe Lindor. A lot of those guys really kind of took a while to find their footing. Pretty common for players in general. But I think for me, a big priority would be somebody that has a teaching mindset, right? We've got a young club. We really do. We're still the youngest team in baseball. And somebody that has an approach geared around helping these young guys get into positions to succeed, because, we've got a ton of time and a ton of value tied up in these young players and assets, so to speak. And I'd hate to see that go to waste because we try and chase a win now type of approach with our managerial hire. So that being the case, a guy that I keep coming back to, now that Will Venables is gone, potentially, is Mike Napoli. He's a guy that I've heard nothing but amazing things about in his ability to work with young players. I have some stories that I can't really share too much about, but I just some stuff that I know about how Mike Napoli really helped Jason Kipnis find a renewed sense of drive, we shall call it, after he signed his contract that helped him have a big year in 2016. Jose and Lindor both credit Napoli with helping them, you know, develop the power aspect of their game, develop into solid big leaguers. And by all accounts, he seems to be a guy that is pretty analytically driven from his time in the Cubs organization. So I think he would be a really, really good blend of baseball guy, like guy that gets it, guy that knows the player side of it, with a guy that can blend the working with the front office on the analytics side of it. I think he would be someone that would really fit in well.
Yeah, I can't argue with that. Party at Napoli's. The whole experience of Napoli being here definitely would convince you if you observe that he would probably be a good manager someday. And hey, I know that the other day you were suggesting Austin Hedges as player manager. It's a very similar vibe, I think. You know, like when those guys are around, the vibes are great and everybody knows you've got their back. And like I said, I think that's what I'm looking for, is somebody who's got your back. So
for the record, the Austin Hedges player manager stuff was very much tongue in cheek.
I think you should lead into it. I don't see, we need to break the mold and change the game. Just picture with me though, you know, they carried a third catcher all year long. He could just be the player manager, and then every now and then when you need someone to just absolutely frame the heck out of stuff and get Emmanuel Clase through an important bottom of the ninth, just bring him in for that.
Yeah, and you know, I pointed it out on Twitter, and I think this bears repeating. We've won two World Series in our franchise's history, and what did we have in common for both of those? Tris Speaker and Lou Boudreau were the managers, and they were both players. Now, were they infinitely better players than Austin Hedges? You bet.
Hall of Famers. Yeah, that might have had something to do with it, but yes, no, the stats are clear. The stats are clear. So yeah, just to wrap up this discussion a little bit, the other thing that Hoynes said is he kind of hinted that maybe the Guardians are waiting for guys who are currently in the playoffs with their teams. And there's been some guys that have been like quietly rumored to be connected to them, and guys who have gotten interviews in the past or been mentioned as guys who are next up for managerial roles. I know Hoynes himself mentioned Mike Calitri, who's the bench coach for the Phillies, and he used to be a scout for the Rays and also for the Guardians. So that might be a name to keep in mind. Certainly the Phillies have vibes out the wazoo. So
absolutely.
If you can bring some of that over, I'm not opposed. Joe Espada, the bench coach for the Astros, he's been rumored for a variety of roles. Troy Snicker, he's been rumored for a bunch of stuff out there. You know, he's the son of Brian Snicker, who's, I think, a great manager for the Braves, and he's the Astros hitting coach. I'm kind of a fan of the idea of poaching some brain talent from organizations like the Astros and organizations like the Braves and the Dodgers. I know Clayton McAuliffe with the Dodgers was also mentioned as somebody who had Guardians connections that they might be looking at on the coaching staff there. And then for the Rangers, of course, mentioned Venable, and he was supposedly taken off the table, but I know you'd said that, hey, maybe it's possible that he might just say, hey, put that to rest for now so we can focus on the playoffs. And
you know, absolutely. I mean, Nick Saban once said, quote, "I will not be the Alabama coach," multiple times in a press conference. And
yeah, we know.
God, I wish it was true.
And then I was just going to say, and then also, I don't know if I see an obvious name on the Diamondbacks coaching staff, but Torey Lovullo has huge Cleveland connections. So I suppose anybody in his coaching tree could possibly be rumored to be connected.
Yeah. And look, here's the thing. I think last I counted, the interview total was at like something like 48 was the list of people that they were considering. So if there's a person who's considered like next up for a managerial job in baseball, I mean, there's only so many of those, right? They're probably on the list. Right. Like it sounds like they're really doing their due diligence. It sounds like they really have a strong list of like, we're going to leave no stone unturned. And I'm fully confident in it. Like, I know that there is some bad vibes surrounding like a couple of bad trades and a couple of like weird roster decisions, but I am fully confident in the decision-making process for Antonetti and Chernoff. They've truly been one of the best front offices in baseball over the last decade. And I'm willing to give them the benefit of the doubt and assume that they're probably going to get a pretty good candidate for this job.
I completely agree. And also, I know there were some people that were down in the mouth about Will Venable saying no, theoretically, and that, you know, there's not really a proven managerial candidate out there right now that's looking for the job here. And I just think that there are so many good names out there. There are so many good baseball guys that I think there's a variety of different options they could pick who will do well here. And I hope we're all ready to give them a chance and say, hey, Tito did a great job here. They obviously have a great culture going. Let's let this guy be the next guy up to help us go to new heights and do great things. And
yep.
Get these young guys together. Like a lot of the guys that I mentioned are guys in their 30s or 40s. And like you talked about with working with the young staff, that can help. I mean, it helps to have the experience, but it also helps to have somebody who maybe understands your generation a little bit better, maybe is bilingual. Those kind of things can help a lot.
So I'm just going to present one thing to you, just one scenario to you before we move on. Josh Naylor hits a walk-off of some kind. And Mike Napoli is walking out of the dugout to celebrate with him.
It's hard to imagine a better option, really.
Right? All I'm saying is that needs to be considered. Is you thought the headbutting with Tito was fun?
Agreed. I can't imagine that. That would be great. Yeah.
So I gotta credit Brian Heminger for that one, but.
And Tito, one of the things that I love Tito did this last year was his constant giving Tristan McKenzie the hoodie wedgie. You see that? Yes. I could see Mike Napoli doing that kind of thing, maybe like giving him a noogie or something. I could see that.
Oh, absolutely. So the other kind of big news right now with the Guardians, for those that are in just absolute sicko mode baseball obsession, is a little thing called the Arizona Fall League. The Peoria, is it the Javelinas?
Javelinas, yes.
My wife's a Spanish teacher. I should have known to. Anyway, we got two players. Well, we got more than two players, but we got two players of consequence on that roster with Kyle Manzardo and Chase DeLauder. And both seem to be absolutely tearing the cover off the ball at every opportunity. I think they went back to back with 450-foot home runs the same game. And both balls were just absolutely destroyed. And I'll be honest, I don't know if I saw a swing like that all year in Cleveland.
Yeah. They were few and far between.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
It is hard not to get hyped about these two guys. And the big news for today being that Keith Law dropped a scouting report on some of the AFL stuff going on. And he talked a little bit about Manzardo and DeLauder. The reports for Manzardo were absolutely glowing. But he did raise some question marks about DeLauder that I don't think are going to be surprising to anybody. Quincy, you want to share a little bit about that?
Yeah, and everybody can go on The Athletic and get a subscription there. A lot of great baseball content. And Keith Law has said that he had concerns about DeLauder's sawed-off swing and the issues with some of his kick. People may have read about DeLauder's scissor kick, about his... trying to think about a good way to describe the swing besides sawed off. It looks kind of like he stops mid swing rather than following through a lot of times, but you know, he's making a lot of hard contact still. Law said that he didn't see him make hard contact in the couple games that he saw him in. And I felt like that kind of let that filter what he was evaluating there a little bit more than maybe it should, because he could probably look and see at the box scores from on Twitter at the box scores to see the guys hitting the ball pretty hard if you look at videos that are out there in general. But yeah, he had some concerns about if the swing was going to sap his power and the effects that it would have. So it was interesting to see.
Well, here's the thing. So Chase DeLauder this year across three levels of the minor leagues, but primarily high A ball, Lake County, hit 355, 417, 528. Now, stat line scouting isn't really the best thing to do, especially at the lower levels of the minors, but he only struck out 30 times in 57 games despite the hard contact he was making. He had 22 doubles in 57 games. I mean, that is just bananas.
Yeah.
I mean, that's Tyler Freeman, Arizona Fall League level stuff.
Yeah. There's no doubt if you look at his numbers that he's making hard contact. And if you just go search on Twitter or X, whatever we're calling it nowadays, if you just search Chase DeLauder in videos, you'll see video after video of him absolutely destroying the baseball.
Right. The long-term question with his swing is going to be whether or not he can consistently generate enough lift to get to his power. But I have no question as to whether or not he's going to be able to consistently put the bat on the ball and put the thick part of the bat on the ball and drive it.
Yeah, I saw Mike Mahoney, our good friend Mike Mahoney, is a good follow on Twitter as well. But I saw him pointing out that while his concerns about exit velocity kind of missed the issue with the ladder being more of his launch angle. And I thought that was a great point, that it seems like that he has no trouble making hard contact. It's just getting it up in the air that's the problem.
For sure. And I think something that, you know, I've talked about at length has been the Guardians' borderline obsession with tapping into hitting the ball in the air and hitting it to the pole side. Now, it's not something we were good at last year. No question about that. But if you look at the year-to-year trends, most of our prospects, most of our top-end talent is really starting to tap into lifting the ball and then hitting it to the pole side. So there's no question that that's going to be an approach that they start to take with DeLotter and trying him to do that. But it really brings up a broader question about player development with his swing, which is when you get a guy who's got kind of a quirk or kind of a unique aspect of their game, how much do you try to change it at risk of maybe losing who they are in the process? Like, he's found something that works for him. And in a game where not a lot of guys do find stuff that works, do you really risk trying to push too far into molding him into what you think he should look like at risk of losing who he is? Because at Quincy, we talked about a little bit before we went on air, Hunter Pence had a long career at the big league level. You know,
yeah.
he had a truly non-traditional approach to hitting.
Yeah, yeah. And there's other guys. Hunter Pence was a great example of that. And there's other guys out there. I mean, I think a while back I was asking people, can we think of people that had that sawed-off approach? And there are a variety of guys who would stop their swing mid-swing, and they made it work for a long time. So, yeah, I think the old, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, definitely applies. But I guess I think it's also fair to say, hey, this is something that's been a concern for other guys. So if we see some signs of trouble with launch angle or even exit velocity, that we should keep that in mind and maybe temper our expectations a bit and maybe think he might have to do some adjusting. Almost every hitter has to do some adjusting to make the bigs.
Absolutely. And Double-A will be a big evaluation period for him, and kind of getting to see what he does against some higher level pitching will be a great opportunity to really evaluate whether or not they'll need to make those kinds of changes. Not that the jump from Double-A to the big leagues is nothing, but it starts to look a little bit more like Major League Baseball when you get to that level. So we'll get a sense for it this year. But for now, you know what? If we're wrong about Chase DeLotter, you realize no one's going to come take away your fan card, right? Like, we can get as hyped about him as we want. And if we're wrong, there is no punishment for it. So just let your hype run rampant, because there's not a lot of things to be excited about when other teams are playing baseball while you're stuck at home. So
you and I share that perspective. I was having a conversation with someone about, like, don't get your expectations high because then you won't have to deal with the disappointment. I have the opposite approach. There's no cost to me in hoping and expecting and dreaming. If it doesn't work out, I'll just find something else to hope and dream and expect about.
Yeah, so. Alex Clemmie will be here any day now. And
that's right. That's right. I read a great article about him from you. So, yeah, and plus we have Kyle Manzardo. And I'll also mention that Kyle Manzardo and Chase DeLotter have been giving us all kinds of great content, from funny pictures, stepbrother style, to dual interviews that they've been doing with them, where they just seem like they're bros who are having a great time out there.
Are we going to get Maguire and Sosa, but like good dudes?
Yeah. Well, they do
seem Maguire
like
and Sosa, Maguire and Canseco. My bad.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's what I think is going to happen. And Kyle Manzardo, he has just a great mustache, I feel like. A young man who's like, I'm going to rock the mustache. I appreciate that. That takes some confidence.
This is very second and third hand information, but I've talked to some people that have talked to him, and apparently he is just like the most down to earth, good old boy you've ever met. Would much rather be at home, zen in the upper lip and just chilling than dealing with any of the like limelight kind of stuff. I mean, he's a guy that Cleveland is going to fall in love with in a hurry. And I'm going to use a phrase that I don't use with prospects very much, I think he's bust proof. I really do.
Yeah, it's hard to look at his stats and not think that there's a floor there. Really, the only thing with him is that he's pretty much stuck at first base. That's really the only flaw in that whole profile, you know. So
now, I did watch him at a Clippers game, and he looks like a baby deer over there at first base.
I know, I saw the same thing. Although, no offense to this guy, but Bryce Ball, who was playing first base for Akron, that was probably the most adventurous first base I've ever seen played. So the lotto looked pretty great compared to that, but that's probably not a good line.
Well, you know, I think there's a lot to get excited about with those two prospects, but I think there's something this offseason. The bigger question is going to be, what are we doing to help the major league roster in the immediate term, right? Like, it's very clear that with this pitching staff that we're in a window where we can contend if we just get the offense fixed. So naturally, everybody's talking all the time about trades and free agent signings. And you know, I thought it would be fun for each of us to kind of present like one trade idea and one free agent signing that we like and just kind of try and defend it a little bit. So I'll let you go first, Quincy. And so what's your trade that you would make? Don't have to necessarily say who we'd give up, just who you'd target.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I think I'm going to go with one that has been kind of an obvious choice for a lot of people. And I think I've been at the forefront of promoting for a while now. And that's assuming that the Angels are going to take a little bit of a step back. I'd like to check into the availability of Taylor Ward. Ward had kind of a snake bitten 2023, just like almost every Angels player. Poor guy got hit in the face with the baseball at the end of the year. Still managed to have a 107 WRC plus with a 338 expected WOBA. If anybody's, you know, kind of wondering about those numbers, 100 for WRC plus is average. 338 WOBA, expected WOBA. I mean, it just means that the numbers said that you were a good hitter, and the expected numbers back that up. So he has hit left-handed pitching very well for his whole career. And is only, sorry, I just want to check here, make sure I'm right in my memory. He's going to turn 30 here in another couple months. So, you know, not in the mid-30s yet. He would also be available for the Guardians for a few years. He's not a free agent until 2027. So the fall of 2026 is when he'll become a free agent. He's hit left-handers at a 118 WRC plus for his whole career. He also is pretty playable in the corners, you know, because I don't want to just completely abandon the idea of defense with these guys. He's been a little below average in right field and above average in left field. So if you get that guy, you're probably, again, thinking about putting Kwan in center, which I'd like to see them try. So I think the team needs some right-handed pop. They need an outfielder. They need somebody who can handle left-handers pretty regularly. And I think Ward's a pretty good hitter who's going to have a couple more good years left in him. So that's and should be available at not a huge cost. So that's my first choice.
Yeah, I think Ward would be a good fit. You know, obviously being a guy that hits left-handed pitching pretty well, that's a need that we have. It's a need that seems like we've had for about 10 years now. But that's a whole other conversation.
Yeah.
We've been gombered one too many times.
I think, just my last thing about Ward, I think in his case, you kind of dream on his 2022 when he had played 135 games, put up 3.9 wins above replacement, 137 WRC plus, 23 homers. I think you dream on, hey, if he can give you a year like that, either next year or the year after, you'd feel pretty darn good about making the trade that it would take to get him.
For sure. And look, I'm not going to – me bringing this trade up doesn't imply that I would be against acquiring Taylor Ward because I think he would be a huge help. But rather than Ward, I think the guy that I've been looking at is Austin Hayes. Now, he's a guy that we talked about a bunch as a potential deadline acquisition, and which very quickly devolved into, well, what if we could just get one of their like prospect guys instead from the Orioles? But I think Hayes is someone that would be a really good fit and represent a temporary solution to a problem that we have the ability to solve long term with guys like DeLauder coming in. But Hayes to me is a guy that has been fairly consistent over the course of his career. Now, he had a big year this year, and I'm not trading for him off the idea that he's going to recreate what he was in the first half of 2023. But if you look at his 2021 and 2022 season, he was pretty consistently a 105, 107 OPS plus kind of guy, right? Above average and better against lefties than he is against righties while not being, better against lefties than he is against righties while not being a complete disaster against right-handed pitching.
Yeah, just to briefly share there, 114 WRC plus against left-handed pitching for his career and right around average against right-handed pitching.
Yep. A guy that would slot in super well, guy that, has a little bit of a different profile offensively than maybe some of the guys that we have. He's got a little bit of swing and miss to his game, but he's got a little bit of pop in there too. I mean, he's a guy that's, put up 50, 60 extra base hits a couple times. Actually, it looks more like 55 at his peak. He's a guy that can hit some home runs, can hit the ball pretty hard, can pull the ball to the left to inside pretty well, or to the left field side pretty well. And a guy that plays solid defense, maybe not gold glove caliber, but solid. He can move a little bit, not really a base stealer, but he can move a little bit. And he's a guy that is just now entering his first year of arbitration. He's a guy that is going to be here till after the 2026 season. So we'd be able to have him for 3 years. And he's a guy that we could probably like is so consistent that he'll hold his value and we could probably move him towards the end if we've got some guys that are ready at the lower levels of the, or that, that are currently in the lower levels of the minors. Guy that also, to be honest, I picked him up in Out of the Park Baseball a couple years ago and he would routinely turn into a 30-30, 300 hitter for me. So I've got a little bit of a soft spot for him, but I think he's a guy that would fit in really well.
Yeah. That's kind of interesting. His difference between his defensive runs saved and his outs above average and left is marked. over his career, he's got 18 defensive runs saved and -6 outs above average in left field. So, wow, you don't usually see that much of a disparity there. I think he's pretty clearly a competent outfielder and an above average hitter. I do think that we're probably going to be a little bit thin on the options for huge upgrades in the outfield position. So getting somebody who you can rely on to be in that 110 WRC plus range and is going to hit left-handed pitching pretty well and will be able to handle a glove without too much problem, that might be about as good as you can go. And like you were kind of pointing out, the Orioles should be willing to trade an outfielder. Whether or not they can match up with the Guardians might be a question, but it's a question worth asking.
Absolutely. The other guy I do want to throw out there because he's gotten some attention from in the Guardian circles is Dylan Carlson. Mm-hmm. A guy that is functionally useless against right-handed pitching, but has put up consistently pretty high OPS pluses against left-handed pitching over the course of his career. I think he's a career. Actually, I can't find it on Baseball Reference, but he's been solid against lefties. He's a career 306, 377, 472 hitter against left-handed pitching. And he's a guy that's a switch hitter that can't hit against righties, which kind of begs the question of maybe he's a guy that you could talk into. What if we just hit right-handed all the time?
And I just wanted to chime in right here because I know I've done some work on this. The other interesting thing about Carlson is that he hit right-handed pitching very well in the minor leagues. So I do wonder, only because he's only 24 years old and his at-bats against right-handed pitching in the majors are still under 1,000, which I know sounds like a lot, but isn't truly that many. I wonder if there might be a little bit more there than what he's shown.
And honestly, playing in a place where I feel like he's clearly felt unwanted for about the mm-hmm. last year, mm-hmm. you can't deny the impact that has on a guy's psyche. And we're right. talking about a guy who is a consensus top 10 prospect in the entire sport, mm-hmm. who plays well above average defense in center field. Could be worth taking a flyer on. He's under team control through 2027. I don't think he'd take a lot to get. The Cardinals are clearly out on him. Might be a good guy to pick up.
If you look at 2021, that's what the season to dream on for him. 111 WRC plus, 2.5 wins above replacement, 18 homers, 172 isolated power. Yeah, that'd be a pretty good season, especially because he looks like somebody who might be able to hack it in center field. He's got above average numbers there defensively.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm not opposed to that idea. I do think, especially if it's somebody that you could get at a good value, that that's a guy to go after. Because it is possible that, I know we're about to talk a little bit about free agents, I think it would be possible to maybe pull off a Carlson deal and then maybe sign a guy who's got a little more slugging potential and do both of those things. And then all of a sudden you're looking at having guys like Valera, Johnny Rodriguez, and Mackenzie Noel, and even Will Brennan as depth instead of guys that you're relying on to come through for you.
For sure. And I think the thing that is important to note is with the lone exception of Juan Soto, there aren't a lot of like splashy trades that are even really out there at the moment for outfielders. And then as far as free agency, the guy that I was going to mention, who's probably the biggest outfielder on the market right now, is Cody Bellinger, which obviously brings with it the question of, can we afford him? And do you trust him to repeat his campaign? Both questions that my answer is, I don't know. But he's a guy that certainly moves the needle in the free agency discussion, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. Do you have any thoughts about, I know that there's some questions about his expected numbers from 2023, that he had a 370 weighted on base average and a 331 expected weighted on base average. A little bit of a high batting average on balls in play of 319. So people are, I know there's people out there that are like, he's probably not quite as good a hitter as he was.
A couple things to point out. There's some change in the approach that's pretty evident, right? Like, you know, in 2022, he struck out 150 times in 144 games. Whew. You know, in 2021, he struck out 94 times in 95 games. In 2023, he only struck out 87 times in 130 games. Now, I know games isn't a truly like leveled out metric.
No, but that's fine.
But he cut his K rate pretty drastically, right?
Yeah.
And his K rate looks far more in line with what it did when he won the MVP award as a 23-year-old in 2019. Mm. Mm-hmm. So that is an encouraging sign, to say the least. Now, he's not walking nearly as much, but he also isn't nearly the threat that he used to be, so he's probably not getting pitched around as much. But the power is back. The ability to just take over a team for a month is back. And you know what? I know BABIP is something that can be hard to sustain when you get up into the high levels of it, but there's also something to be said for when you hit the ball hard, good things happen. And he seemed like he was hitting the ball really hard during that hot stretch that he had. He started to look like the player of old. He stole 20 bags this year, still plays solid defense. He's a guy
that can play center field.
What?
He can play center field still.
He can play some center field still. So, you know, again, is he a guy that's going to probably regress a little bit? Yeah, you bet. Of course he will. But is a slight regression from what he was last year still an excellent player?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so too. I think you've defended it well, and I would expect, you know, for people that are kind of trying to think about what we need, if you go by WRC plus, my goal is to have somebody, at least one new guy who you can think of as a 120 WRC plus or better. And I'm trying to think about how to describe that, you know, in terms of OPS. If you take on base and slugging together, you're probably looking at a 335, 340 guy for, you know, on base, and then somewhere in the 450 to 500 level for slugging. I think he's that kind of guy. I think that he's for sure going to be that kind of guy. So, I think that makes sense. It would be exciting if the Guardians were playing in that end of the free agent pool. If they were that deep in the free agent pool, that would be pretty exciting. He's only 28 years old. So if they were ever to spend some real money in free agency, that's the kind of player they should spend it on.
Yeah, and I think he'd be a good candidate for something similar to what we did with Josh Bell, but in a little bit more of an extreme sense, where Bellinger's the kind of guy where, with his pedigree and his name too, being a guy that's won an MVP award, if he were to go out and prove it one more year and hit free agency next year, he could be a guy that's looking at being a $250, $275 million player for sure.
Yeah.
So maybe selling him on one of those opt-out type of deals where we get him for next year as a pseudo rental with the security of a second or third year if he maybe falls on his face a little bit. I have no problem giving him the money he's going to ask for. My question mark would be the length that it might take to get him.
I'm sure that'll be the case for the Guardians too, honestly. I think they would probably be in on a short-term deal. And I think the question is, because of the lack of depth in the free agent market, if there might be a team out there that's really willing to spend a good bit to say, we think he is basically who he was in 2023 and he's under 30, so we're going to give him a 6 to 7 year deal. Because if that happens, then the Guardians aren't going to do that.
Right, which you got to bring into account the fact that he's likely going to be the consolation prize for whoever misses out on the potential Juan Soto sweepstakes.
And also whoever misses out on the Shohei Ohtani sweepstakes,
for sure.
Too. Yep. So it probably, I don't think he's going to sign until probably early January, so we won't know for sure. But if they're in on him, I'd be excited. My free agent guy, and I know people have mentioned him before, but I'll throw Teoscar Hernandez out there. I think he'd probably be available on a one-year deal, maybe like you said, like a Josh Bell deal where you say there's an opt-in on it. And again, not super exciting. He didn't have the greatest year this year. It was a down year for him, a 105 WRC+, but his expected WOBA says he was probably better than what he ended up being. So just listen, though, to these last 3 years for Teoscar Hernandez: 2020, 2021, 2022, 142 WRC plus, 132 WRC plus, 130 WRC plus. Now, he now is 31, so it's possible that maybe he's hit some sort of aging cliff and he's not going to be quite that player anymore. But the one thing that he can still consistently do is hit left-handed pitching. He has 120 WRC plus against left-handed pitching this year. And for his career, it's somewhere closer to 136 WRC plus.
He's got an 890 OPS for his career against
left-handed
pitching.
That's
stellar.
Yes. So that figures nicely. He's going to hit left-handed pitching. I know that he's, and I've heard from several people that he's very good friends with Jose Ramirez, which again, though, I'm not sure who isn't a good friend with Jose Ramirez if you're from the Dominican Republic especially, but almost from anywhere, everybody likes Jose. But that's something to consider. He's not a good defender, and I think I'd be safe to say that Teoscar Hernandez is actually a DH, but he was slightly above average in right field this past year in Seattle, so I think it's probably a place you're okay playing with him, especially if you have a good defensive replacement available. And I think the Guardians would have that.
Miles
Straw. So, yeah, Miles Straw or even Will Brennan if he's that fourth outfielder, Miles Straw's the fifth outfielder. You got multiple options that would work in there. So, yeah, I think a one-year deal for Teoscar Hernandez wouldn't be the most exciting thing ever, but would be a good upgrade, and then gives you the chance to let guys like Johnny Rodriguez and Mackenzie Nowell continue to develop at their own pace as far as those like right-handed slugger bats that you're kind of dreaming on. And maybe one of those two takes a big step and looks like they're ready and they can help at the end of the year and then take over next year. And that would be the dream.
I am 100% on board with that. Don't forget, outfield defense is certainly important. But the Phillies have played Nick Castellanos in right field at times. You know, we made the playoffs with 83 games of Oscar Gonzalez playing in right field.
Yeah.
You know,
yes.
Like it's important, but, you know, you give up two runs on a bad defensive play and then you score three on a long drive to left field and all is forgiven.
Nick Castellanos is also a great one to bring up because I love how he's like, it's the playoffs. I'm actually going to play defense now because I do think that is the case for sometimes guys are like, hey, I really got to focus on this aspect of my game that I don't spend a ton of time on. And they tend to play a little bit better defense in the playoffs. Kind of similar to some of these Phillies relievers. Like they got so many guys that can throw the absolute heck out of the ball, but don't always know where it's going. But I think I'd have to, of course, do some statistical analysis. But I do think that relievers that throw hard tend to fare pretty well in the playoffs, because everything just speeds up so much on hitters in those situations. And I think they maybe lock in a little bit more on getting a few more strikes across. So I think it's a similar kind of thing. So I think if you can get your team to the playoffs, Teoscar Hernandez is a good guy to have.
I could be convinced of that. Well, Quincy, I think we're hitting kind of the end of our time here for this week's episode of the podcast. I did want to highlight a couple things going on with the Covering the Corner website. Some cool new stuff. One, we've picked up somewhere in the realm of like five or six new writers in the last couple weeks. So be on the lookout for all kinds of new stuff from them. Quincy, you had an excellent article today about Trevor Stephan and perhaps quote unquote fixing him. A little bit for next year. Do you want to just touch on that really quickly?
Sure, yeah. If anybody's worried about Trevor Stephan, you can read the article and see me get worried about it too. But then also say, hey, he's the kind of guy who's shown the ability to make adjustments and to learn new things. So I think we can give him a mulligan on 2023 and hope for him to fix some of the issues he's had with velocity and mainly slider shape and movement. That seemed to need to take place for him to get back to closer to who he was in 2022.
For sure. And then we've also been running a series that all of our writers have been participating in, where we've been, it's been 75 years since Cleveland last won a World Series. So we've been counting down each season since we last won. I think we're up to the 1951 season. So every weekday, there's a new article talking about a season. Tomorrow's going to be 1952, and Thursday will be 53, Friday 54, so on and so forth. It's been a lot of fun. It's been a really fun trip down memory lane, getting into some of the fun things. Like we recently learned that Larry Doby's presence was enough to get three young Negro leaguers to sign with us if we had offered them contracts, but bad scouting reports said we wouldn't sign them. And it turns out that those players were Hank Aaron, Ernie Banks, and Willie Mays. So a
Dang.
little bit of a miscue
Jeez.
by general manager Hank Greenberg on that one.
Just signing even one of those guys, just would like to
Could you
know that
imagine all three of
timeline.
them in a lineup going up against those Yankees teams?
We're about to, on Friday, we're going to cover 1954. Imagine if Willie Mays was in that Cleveland Indians lineup in
Just keeping them off
1954.
the Giants.
Might have won a World Series.
Yeah.
Oh,
And
dang.
then as far as future for the podcast, we're just excited to be back with this, honestly, and having this as a thing that we're going to be doing fairly regularly. I think we're shooting for once or twice a month during the off season, or just kind of as news becomes available. The minor league podcast will still be continuing. But that's kind of brings us to the most important part, which is hosting. Given that we've got so many new writers, we figured it'd be a great opportunity to give everybody more chances to be involved in the podcast. I know Matt Schlichting is going to be stepping away from the Around the Corner podcast, so we're going to be rotating hosts all the time for everything. You might be seeing me on the Around the Corner podcast. You might be seeing Brian host this one. You might be hearing voices you've never heard before. But we're going to be given a chance to get as many new voices as possible, Quincy being the primary one. It'll be mostly me and him hosting this, occasionally with a third and occasionally rotating, but we'll be kind of the flagship hosts with some changes intermixed through there. Quincy, do you have anything to add before we wrap up?
No, yeah, that's great. I just r echo what you said about checking out Come Around the Corner and the new writers we have. Just a lot of really good new voices to listen to and learn from and join the conversation.
Awesome. Well, hey, thanks so much for joining me, Quincy. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we will see you next time.